minutes from our previous meeting first. House Bill 555 and Senate Bill 478 were held over till today. And then we'll take up HBR 71 and HB 326. House Bill 555, we had before us, had quite a bit of testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 555? Senator Brody, please join us.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I won't take a great deal of your time. The question arose of where the language in House Bill 555 came from. The origin was originally discussions between myself and Mr. Lair of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Mr. Jim Baldwin, who is the Attorney General, very experienced Attorney General, drafted the changes that are, or the changes in existing law that are in there now. The intent is to give HFC expanded powers to deal with an unsettled economy in terms of providing a variety of different programs to strengthen their portfolio in the long run. As everyone is aware, the condo market and the trailer loan portfolio are their two biggest difficulties. This gives them the authority to do what is necessary to stabilize that market as well as the single family market. And that's the reason for it. There is no cost to it, but it is important to all the people of the state. I'm sorry, I didn't know you were taking this up, and I didn't know it had been attached to 555, or I would have come down here to explain it. I'd be happy to explain any part of the bill if there are any questions about it. I think the language is relatively self-explanatory there, and it has been discussed over a long period, and does come directly from HFC.
Thank you, Senator Brody, for that explanation and for joining us. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, I had my packet with me. Is there a new committee substitute, version of the committee substitute? Mm-hmm.
Not to the best of my knowledge.
This is the last one I had. And I
421?
It looks like it's a different.
Let's see.
421?
Okay, while you take a look at that, Representative Davidson, did you have a question?
Yes, I had something I wanted to discuss, and that is I received some correspondence from a brokerage firm in Anchorage, and apparently the criticism was that AHFC deals only with seven different brokerages.
A designated broker program, yes.
A designated broker program. And I was wondering, does this mean then that this would reinforce that program, or are we going to open it up so that other brokerages have an opportunity to deal in these kinds of things as well?
No, this legislation has no impact on the designated broker program. They can do that under the existing statutes, but they are expanding the program to get at least 10 additional, or to expand the number from 7 to 10. And my personal position is that I would urge them to expand it a bit more than that. Otherwise, you'll have a very unfair situation because AHFC is the major force in the market at this time.
So then,
but the legislation does not have any effect on that.
Excuse me. And Senator, I think that we agree on this issue because if we're going to, through artificial mechanisms, affect the market, then it seems to me that we should at least spread it out to as many in the market as we can. Where would be a good place to affect that kind of change? Would it be in this statute or other legislation?
Probably another legislation because we would be dealing with a resolution to request AHFC to consider expanding the designated broker program, and they are expanding it now. And the question of is where should it be expanded to?
So it's not really then a topic or that's related to this legislation.
No, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Oh, Representative Martin.
Not of the Senator, but looking at the title changes in this, it was originally a House bill that we're changing the title to. But the Senate bill that came to us is on this one. A little technical here to say
we don't have a Senate bill.
No, but we put Senate Bill 462 in it. I thought we were merging two bills together that the gentleman, Mr. Fett, told us the other day.
Representative Martin, there has been discussions in the House Finance Committee of merging some of these concepts into House Bill 432.
Yeah.
That's
not
so
basically
a
all we're doing is the House bill that we're just submitting when we change it.
If I could respond, Madam Chairman. The 555 had nothing to do with the language that is on there now. It was originally for Willow Park, which I think is a very desirable program. This language was typed up in the Attorney General's office, and I have to apologize for I didn't know it was going to be added, or I would have spoken with the chair and the other members of the committee. My apologies for the lack of courtesy on that.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
Madam Chairman, the original sponsor, the intent is quite a bit different, and I don't know if the sponsor had realized that the $10 million allocation had been deleted. I'm assuming that Mr. Representative Bloomberg was the original sponsor.
Through the chair, to Ms. Burton, I believe the Economic Recovery Committee was the original sponsor of 555. That's my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
The committee bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you,
committee members.
Anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 555? If not, any other committee discussion? Representative Menard?
Madam Chair, on the what Representative Martin, on the original there was $10 million allocation. Of course, that was a different situation. But the way I read this is, their Alaska Housing can use their reserves in this capacity how they see fit. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Right. Okay.
Any other discussion? If not,
Madam Chair, can we
Representative
move this?
Dunley?
Can we move this to the bottom of today's calendar?
There is no objection to moving it to the bottom of today's calendar. I would like, if at all possible, to dispose of it today, but we will bring it back.
So where we're at procedurally is we have not adopted the 421 substitute since we haven't met.
That's right.
420. So we still need to adopt the committee substitute. So do we have any, have we adopted any committee substitute at this time?
My recollection is that there was a motion made by Representative Bernard which we tabled as your objection.
So it is in limbo. Okay, that's where I'd like to leave it just for the moment, Madam Chair.
Okay, we will return to it before we adjourn today, I hope. Senate Bill 478. Mr. Gillard, would you like to join us, please? Mr. Gillard, when we met last to discuss 478, we were looking at two amendments which were proposed by Representative Brown, which it is my understanding have been incorporated into the draft CS dated 421. And I wonder if you would just briefly comment on the position of the Division of Tourism on the CS.
I think at this point the division is has no objection to the CS as it stands. One thing that I would, speaking for the division, point out, I think there was some discussion of giving the director as chair of the Marketing Council a vote, and I mentioned that today to Commissioner Smith, and he had no objection to that, so the last work session there was discussion of that, and that would, I think, please us. Offered with all respect on page 9 and then section 5 there. Right now it sits as the presiding officer may not vote except in the case of a tie.
For the benefit of those members of the committee who were not at the work session, the rationale behind that is basically that the committee or the council is made up of 10 public members appointed by the governor and 10 members that come from the tourism industry. And I think the discussion was that if the tourism director had a vote, it would be in an effort to kind of balance public and private interest and be able to assert the policy of the Division of Tourism. And the consensus of that work session was that it was a good idea. Representative Menard, did I cover that?
Yes, that's right, Madam Chair, and I support.
Okay, would you like to so move?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, it has been moved that we give the director voting authority. Question, Representative Martin?
Oh, that's okay, then. In that amendment.
Okay, is there any objection to that amendment? Without objection, then we will insert that provision at the appropriate place somewhere on page 9. So, Representative Menard, did you have another
question? Yeah, I had another concern, Madam Chair, back on, I think, we talked about the discussion, and I would like to bring this up on page 7 on line 25. The refreshing our memory on the commissioner shall versus may, and I think we had a little bit of discussion on that, and there was so-so. But the way I read that, you know, unless the commissioner determines that it is not in the best interest of the state, the way it is now, it says the commissioner shall. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a concerns that the word may might be more appropriate in there, which would give more flexibility.
Mr. Gellert, do you have a comment on that suggestion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bernard, my comment would be, I think we are adequately protected there by the first clause. In other words, if the commissioner does not determine that it is in the best interest of the state, he does not contract. And so with the conditional clause in there, I think we would be perfectly happy with shall there. Small point.
I don't have a problem. I just want to bring it up for discussion to be sure.
Okay. Thank you. Any other suggestions or comments? Representative Martin.
Madam Chairman, on the fiscal notes, do we have an update on that since the new amendment from Representative Brown calls for substantial work by the various commissioners and or the designated people? It's going to take time and money. We better realize it or we're going to give them responsibility, one or the other.
Do you have a comment on this one?
Chair Martin, I think our position is that this would
can do it for nothing. You get enough money out of it.
I hate to say that because it is time and time is money, but I think we would just
work an hour. We'll do it over lunchtime or something.
How about Saturday morning sessions?
Very productive. Yes. what we get away with when we want to with no fiscal note.
Except during ski season, we'll do it on Saturday mornings.
Could I have a motion to adopt the CS? Representative Bernard.
I have a question first.
Representative Coughlin.
On page 3, lines 26 through the last part, the first part of page 4. On line 24, we're including may, and this whole section in the past was a shall. And if we're concerned about tourism, why are we saying that we may promote and develop Alaskan tourism and the gist of that whole paragraph? It seems if we want to concentrate on tourism, that should be left up in section, in the first part of the section, 1 through A, B, or C, and maybe included as D, because it was the third part of the shall originally.
Mr. Gellert.
Madam Chair, thank you, Chairman Hoffman. I think the intent there is to give the division some flexibility in the means of promoting and developing the tourist convention industry through, for instance, goes on through such means as display advertising in magazines, newspapers, advertising on radio, or other advertising media. My interpretation was that it would just give us flexibility in choosing whatever means come up in the future to best promote the industry.
I guess my concern arises from the fact that that is going to be an option, and more emphasis will be placed on existing tourism programs and less emphasis on potential development of tourism in and the places that don't have tourism are primarily in rural Alaska. So I guess I have concerns that it's optional now, and as I said, then we'll be concentrating on the existing tourism packages.
Madam Chair, I would say that really our intent is, by leaving the flexibility, is really just the opposite. One of the goals that I think stated earlier in the legislation is, which we agree with very strongly, is to try to ensure that tourism is spread throughout all areas of the state.
I don't see how it can be just the opposite when you say you may promote, and then if you want it strong, then you say it shall be promoted.
Madam Chair, again, my interpretation was that the may was just to be give us flexibility in choosing the means of how to promote, but we certainly would have no objection to making it shall. I think it's we're adequately covered.
I wonder if a way of solving this dilemma is if you, on line 24, subsection 2, where it says may, if it would read shall promote and develop the Alaska tourist and convention industry by any of the following. And then comes the list A, B, C, D, E, F, G, etc. Because some years you might participate in a travel show, but other years you might not. And some years you might do visitor information centers, and other years you might not have the money to. And, you know, so Representative Hoffman, would that address your concern? Would you have any objection to that?
No, I think, that would be fine.
Okay, I think that shall promote and develop the Alaska tourist and convention industry by any of the following, and then blank, blank, blank. That's a conceptual amendment, which the drafter will have to rework the numbers, but I will interpret that as Representative Hoffman's motion. Is there any objection to that? If there isn't, that is also adopted. Okay, any other discussion? If not, Representative Menard?
Madam Chair, do you want to, we haven't adopted this House CS, so I make a motion to adopt the House CS for Senate Bill 478.
421-88 as amended. Any objection? Without objection, it is adopted. Any other discussion? Anyone else here to testify on this bill? Okay, Representative Mark.
No, Tim, where's this go next?
Finance.
Okay. To work on the fiscal note. Okay, Representative Mark.
Madam Chair, if there's no further discussion, I would go ahead and move the bill out for the individual recommendation.
Any objection? Without objection, the bill moves. Thank you very much. Okay, the next item, of course, is H.J.R. 71 by the Labor and Commerce Committee.
Uh-oh.
Representative Donnelly.
How would this get on the calendar?
I don't know.
Risa Jarrell is here to testify on it. Would you like Risa to go ahead, or would you like to give us a little overview first?
Sorry, I didn't hear you over all the noise.
I was just asking Representative Donnelly if he wanted to give us a brief overview or just let you go ahead and testify.
Madam Chair, I just real briefly, the problems developed in specific examples with Japan in that they're and other countries, I shouldn't just single out Japan, but Japan has been the most recent, most glaring example of where particular nations will not allow United States contractors to even bid on construction projects in those nations, or through other means exclude our people from our bidding on projects in their economies. And this resolution is simply recommend to Congress that if other nations are doing that, then we should reciprocate. There should be equality in the marketplace, and that and specifically, that if the United States Trade Representative lists a particular nation as one that denies fair and equitable market opportunities for products and services of the United States in the procurement and bidding for certain construction contracts, that we should reciprocate on those. And specifically, there's a lot of concern right now with the Bradley Lake project in that certain contracting companies from the Pacific Rim, from Pacific Rim nations, are going to be very active bidders on that project, but a lot of their home companies or home nations, our contractors are not allowed to participate in their economies. And simply is fair resolution.
Thank you, Representative Donnelly.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Risa Jarrell, and I'm the Director of Governmental Relations for AGC of Alaska. We naturally, wholeheartedly support this resolution. We had early on in session had hoped to have a law passed and went to Representative Donnelly and another person on the other body to have a law introduced because of the Bradley Lake and some other potential projects. The legal people had major concerns with that. Therefore, the resolution you sent before today is a result of not being able to get a bill drafted, a law. And so, therefore, we so wholeheartedly support the resolution. We'd like to see it move on.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Martin.
Yeah, the only problem I have here at this moment is that we're talking about a publicly funded construction project. Should we not be a little more explicit and say federally funded? Because various states have different agreements with the foreign countries and stuff like that. Although we may not agree with them for what Kentucky does with Japan or whatever,
it seemed to me that we should be a little more explicit in saying federally funded monies, and then we can do for ourselves by stable for one.
Madam Chair, I believe it's proper to that this be, although it can't include state money, but the proper governmental level, proper level of government here is the federal government. And what the resolution calls for is a positive. It's a reciprocity agreement in which both the United States and other nations would agree not to discriminate against either's citizens in this type of process. And that's the proper role for the federal government. Now, the federal government, in matters of commerce like this, is the ultimate law of the land, and they do have the treaty power, and the United States Senate has the treaty power. So any individual actions by states are, in fact, if a state, I believe that, Representative Martin, I know, is a constitutional scholar, maybe he remembers this part of the Constitution, but I remember that before states can specifically negotiate treaties with other nations, they have to get the approval of Congress to do so, and I think it's a very rare circumstance. And they might even be, they're generally prohibited from doing so. I think there may be a special provision in the Constitution left over from the early 1800s where if states do that, Congress has to give them the approval to do that. But that might have even been something left over from the Articles of Confederation, I'm not sure. But certainly the federal government is the body that would negotiate these type of treaties for both the expenditure of state on state levels for state government and for federal government.
Well, Madam Chairman, there's no doubt whatsoever that only the federal government has absolute rights of treaties with foreign nations and things like that. However, when you're talking about commerce and trade, this is one of the things that the state vehemently fought over. Eventually, through Hamilton, they got a compromise statement that said that the federal government will be involved in commerce and trade. But in reality, it was kind of loosely done, that anyone who could get into contact with France or England for our foreign products mostly, bless you, you know, and then we bought their goods. But that was one of the initial battles. You know, England didn't want us to trade with anybody or the state to have that. So I think if it's the state money, and maybe it may be mute here, but if it's the state money, I don't think a federal government is going to interfere too much with what Kentucky did to get that trade agreement with Japan for building automobiles there. With our foreign trade zone in Anchorage, I wouldn't mind inducing some money for the development of the ships coming in and inducing Japan or Korea or whoever it is to use our facilities and contact with us if it's our money. It may be minor now. They may just throw the thing out once they get it, but anyway. I think that if we could be a little more explicit, it may show that we know something.
Oh.
Any other discussion on this bill? Yes, Representative Donnelly.
Representative Martin raised an interesting constitutional point I hadn't really considered, but I would think that the interstate commerce clause would forbid states from making agreements with other nations to the exclusion or detriment of other citizens of the United States, so that if you're going to have any reciprocity agreements, they're going to have to be handled on the federal level.
It's pretty well open, but once that state makes its agreement, like in Japan, and you know the war that went on with different states, it was open. You know, we want to put a cement plant, we want to put a new airplane plant in X place. Volkswagen wants to come to America. So the bidding war with different cities and different states again, because we want those jobs that they can help us with. So as long as it's open to all states equally, and then some states get more perks than the others, then they get settled in that state. So reciprocity, I don't think really had to do with it as long as the equality with all the states they're dealing with. It may be mute. I just wanted to say that so other states don't say that we are, we don't like them telling us what to do with the Jones Act, although they did in Congress. We don't want them to tell us not to export our raw materials, but they got away with it anyway. So here we're maybe saying the same thing. Maybe it's equal. We tell you not to use your public money for any foreign country that has unfair trade advantages.
Anything else you'd
like
to add? Any other comments? Okay, can I have a motion to the resolution, please? Representative Donnelly.
I'll move the bill with individual recommendations, Madam Chair, or the resolution.
Any objection? Without objection. HDR 71 Rules of Committee. The next item before us is House Bill 326, Prime Sponsor, Representative Ad Hanna, is with us. If you'd like to take a seat, please.
David didn't come up in your meeting?
No. I think.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anne Pye Herman, and I represent District 26 in the legislature. To talk a little bit more about House Bill 326, I gave extensive opening remarks at the last hearing. I introduced House Bill 326 because I believe the state personnel system has major problems that keep qualified rural Alaskans from getting state jobs located in their communities. This bill would abolish the register system and require the Department of Administration to come up with a new system for hiring employees. There are so few jobs in rural Alaska that the ones there are very important to the residents of those communities. However, because of the problems in the register system, it's very difficult for them to get the jobs. The register system, as I said before, is complicated, expensive, and time-consuming. It is closed and inflexible. And it has other problems that keep rural Alaskans from getting state jobs. I believe the system should be simplified. I also believe it should be more flexible. For example, so that the knowledge of the local area and culture is a consideration when hiring state employees to work in rural areas. Many Alaskans have had problems with the register system, as was evident in the testimony given to you at your February teleconference hearing on this bill. Some improvements have been made to the system, but I believe much more could and should be done. I recently met with new Director of Personnel, David Otto, and a member of the Governor's staff. Although I was encouraged by their willingness to listen and by their interest in improving the system, I would like to pursue this legislation to be sure that action is taken on this issue. Again, I would like to emphasize that I believe qualified rural Alaskans should have the opportunity to get state jobs located in their communities, and that the current register system keeps them from getting the jobs. Urban area residents also have problems and difficulties getting on the register. We need a personnel system that, quote, serves all Alaskans. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? If not, you're either welcome to move a chair around. There are some other people who wish to testify, or we could come back to the table if we have other questions later. Thank you. Richard Stitt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Richard Stitt, the Grand President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill number 326. I'm a Tlingit of the Eagle Moiety and a member of the Man's Foot House Clan. As a Native speaking from a Native's perspective, I'm motivated by frustration against the state registration system that doesn't seem capable of bending. I don't know who the state register system aids. I'd be interested in listening to someone tell me who in our Alaska society does this current system help. Personally, I'm not able to determine who this system helps, and I don't think it helps any Alaskans. For these reasons, if an individual seeks to obtain employment within the state government, you must be currently employed. Otherwise, that person would starve to death waiting for a call to go to work. It is obvious it really doesn't help the unemployed, though it may purport to. Taking the scenario further, it really helps those who are currently employed, especially those who are currently employed in the state government. These people don't really need that assistance. They are already employed. How do I know this? I'm on the state registry, and I'm currently employed. I've submitted an application and received a grade that occurred over 1 year ago. And to this day, I don't know what happened or what is my status. I've been received, graded, and filed away. It all seems so mysterious, like it vanished into a black hole. Currently, the state sentiment is to help our own state residents by stressing local hire and applying pressure on state contractors to hire local residents. This is good. The current registration system is out of step with this effort. We need a change. Many governors have seriously intended to improve on the low ratio of Alaska Natives employed in the state government, but they appear to be stymied by some barrier that exists that's greater than they are. We need a change. Alaska is not so densely populated that we need to maintain a strict formality among its citizens. We should deal with each other as neighbors, and if we feel like a neighbor, we will act toward each other like a neighbor. If our people feel like bureaucrats, they will act like bureaucrats. This current system creates a cold, impersonal atmosphere. Alaska doesn't need that. We need a change. Mr. Ron Williams was going to testify, but he had another appointment at 3:30, and he's meeting with the school board to try to work with them about trying to increase the number of Native teachers in that current school system. So we're interested in a lot of facets of trying to improve our current situation. The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida is currently meeting there in their second day of deliberations, and they too, with 109 delegates, have submitted, have passed a resolution, and it strikes at this notion that there's an imbalance in the employment situation of our Native people, and it somewhat addresses the need to implement and really take seriously that legislation that President Reagan had overridden and, I mean, that vetoed, but was overridden by Congress. What is stating that as Native people we are constantly dealing with what appears to be an inequitable situation, and I believe that that state register system just isn't a tool for us. I happen to be talking with in Gary Pesky's office, and I wish I could remember the exact figures, but a figure of 360,000 names are on that registration. We might as well be honest. 90% of those names are going nowhere. They're being maintained. There's a very uncertain relationship between those applicants, that application. It's just, it fools people. And I think we're smarter and more generous than that. So I really urge that that bill be endorsed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stewart. Are there any questions? Thanks for joining us. Sherry Shelley?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Sherry Shelley, representing the Alaska Public Employees Association. And APA, too, would certainly support simplifying the state personnel system and making it more responsive for local hire. However, we do have some concerns about this particular piece of legislation. With regards to Section 2, we think that there may be a constitutional challenge regarding equal opportunity and denying equal access for all Alaskans to apply for a job. Regarding Section 4, we're concerned with the last sentence, which states that the division may not use the current register system for evaluating applicants and recruiting eligible applicants to vacancies after June 30th, 1989. The ramifications of that language are somewhat staggering. It's my understanding the division personnel has over 200,000 applications on record for over 10,000 jobs. And to state, as this section does, that we are no longer going to use the current system after June 30th, 1989, which is a little more than a year away, and we replace it with a system that is yet unknown, is very difficult for us to support. Likewise, this section totally leaves out the unions who represent the vast majority of the employees and what role they would have in developing a new personnel system. And our suggestion would be that maybe it's time to establish a Blue Ribbon Commission to look at the division of personnel and the register system. We had such a commission several years ago to look at the Collective Bargaining Act, and they came up with some very good recommendations. But it's very difficult to support change when you don't know what that change is.
Representative
Boucher. Sherry, I'm a supporter of the public employees and have been on record, but this thing's been kicking around since I showed up down here the first time as a rookie. By and large, the Native people in the state of Alaska don't have access to jobs. Now, what the hell do we do? Do we have to blow up the system to have that happen? This is an effect. I mean, I'm sure that Representative Herman is dealing out of frustration that we can't do anything with it. And we keep Blue Ribbon Committee. God, there's been more Blue Ribbon Committees on this. Let's get real. What can we do to eliminate this frustration out there? I mean, I think collectively we don't need a Blue Ribbon Committee. We want to do something about it. They want to do something about it, and I'm sure you want to do something about it. So let's do something about it. I mean, it's just a crummy system. when out in the villages themselves, these people that have lived there all their life know and understand the culture can't get a job, and they see people getting off the plane and going to work. That is the, that's why for years, and excuse me if I'm speaking on this, this is what I spoke on the floor. That's why you never got out of rural Alaska to support for this local hire, as you call it, because local hire meant to them watching a guy come in with his toolkit and taking the job away from them. And that ought to be one of our top priorities. Instead of pouring welfare dollars out there, how can we put the people to work, especially on jobs in their own village? I know you don't have an answer to that, but we're dealing with a lot of frustration here. And it'll come and it'll go, and maybe it doesn't stand that much chance of passage because there'll be some way to stop this. But we as Alaskans, we're neighbors. This is what the hell was talked about here. This is what Alaska's all about. We pulled in the latch string and our own people can't get a job. And sure, Bill Egan did the same thing. We tried to put them in. I remember when he put the former mayor of the one, Evan Hobson, up on the third floor to see if we could do something about it. But that's all. That's a speech. That's not a comment. But we don't need more blue ribbon committees. We studied the damn thing to death.
If I might just respond to our request for a blue ribbon commission, I think APA was active in changing the retirement system so that people couldn't go out to rural Alaska and automatically get their high three and leave. Mm-hmm. Now you have to spend 50% of your time. Okay. We supported the alternate registers, and I can't remember what they're called, where they can get an underutilized register that will allow minority hires. We've negotiated in our contract for layoff procedures, the secondary layoff list, because the Commissioner of Administration, Eleanor Andrews, felt that the first people to be laid off would in fact be minorities, and that has turned out to be the most controversial issue, non-economic, in our negotiations, because the administration wants to do away with that.
Yes.
And that is the very procedure that will let these people get back if they're laid off. So we certainly don't oppose local hire, but unless you take some experts to study a system that is large as this one, there's no easy answer.
It's like a dinosaur.
I don't disagree.
I mean, it's disconnected, the body's disconnected from the brains. It's dysfunctional. It's not working. How many people are on it for 10,000 jobs? 200 and some odd thousand? It's got to be ridiculous.
Half of them out of state applicants.
Then it's screwed up.
Concerned about what you said was unconstitutional. Of course, that's a big thing we all get scared about when we pay the line immediately.
Blow it up.
The one we passed yesterday, where we say if a person is not conforming an agency to affirmative action plan, EEO would mandate new hiring, correct hiring procedures. But some of the union says that's unconstitutional and it's against collective bargaining. But the rules are unions are supposed to obey collective bargaining and the intent of the minority hire as much as any other organization. But somehow or other, affirmative action is anti-union, is what I'm getting the picture after 3 years on my bill and what you're saying here.
Well, I'm just concerned, and I'm not a constitutional attorney, that there might be a challenge.
Well, I'm not either. I'm just a human being thinking fairness. We all believe in fairness. You know that much about the Constitution.
The same as the state has had problems on a statewide level on local hire, I think that you might have some problems on
a lot of problems. Local
community local hire from precluding people from making, for example, applying for a job in Bethel.
No, we're looking strictly at what collective bargaining has set up already.
You're talking about Section 2, Section 9.
Local hire, the federal government has made it clear that any state or any private business in high unemployed area can hire those people for specific purposes of employment. That is one of the major, most important exemptions that we have in areas, in most cases, with minority people in our country. The federal government and the U.S. court system have made it very clear that that is a perfect, legitimate right of trying to get people in regions of high unemployment employed. And put local hire exemptions there.
Any other questions for Sherry Shelley, Representative Puffman?
Yeah, I guess I don't see the problem in Section 2 because it says must, but the last sentence, the last two words say where, when appropriate. So I think it has still some leeway in there, and I would doubt seriously if that would cause constitutional problems.
Any other questions or comments for sure? Thank you for joining us. David Otto?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Otto. I'm the Director of Personnel. The enemy? No. I agree.
Just a
with
new
the,
one. It away.
You're not
the enemy. This thing, the system is, and no one's willing to change it.
You're just the, you're the zookeeper.
The messenger. Let's hear from the messenger.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's right.
I agree with the intent to stop the barriers and make the system more flexible, accessible, and fair. Since his appointment of March 8th, as my appointment of Director of Personnel, probably the most important consideration that I've been dealing with has been this bill. The Governor's Office, the Commissioner of Administration has made it perfectly clear to me that I'm under mandate to make a new personnel system. I've been meeting with commissioners, personnel officers, many other groups and employees and non-employees, allowing them to communicate anything they want to on a very strong open complaint process. I'm absolutely convinced, yes, there have to be changes. We're beginning with a process of looking what changes can we make immediately with a stroke of the pen, and what kind of changes must be done through the personnel board and in the rules, what statutory recommendations can be done, what kind of things need to be done through the contracts, collective bargaining. I have identified some specific deals that we're working on right now, some changes that I can begin to happen. The first is that is a need for job vacancy recruitment on a regular basis. My goal would be to see that every time in any place that there is a job vacancy in state government, that the same time the vacancy is announced, which it would be announced, the register or the application process immediately can happen. That is to say, you apply for a real job, much like everybody's used to, okay? We want to assure applicants that they're applying for a job, not applying for a spot on a register, a black hole.
Yeah.
So, the second is to give credit for rural work experience. We believe, too, and find that there's a way to give this in terms of local job experience. One, because we think that a local candidate is more likely to stay. They are already adapted to the local conditions. And since they're already in the community, they tend to communicate better the state's perspective or communicate better with the public in general. There's a lot of good reasons to give credit of how, such as cultural awareness and a lot of things in job interviewing. Many hiring supervisors have never, ever had the training to be a supervisor and to make a selection. We think that there's an awful lot in our own goals and emphasis in this whole area that needs to be given training to. I've taught training management courses all over this state to people who constantly said, I wish I knew this 20 years ago, or I wish I knew I could do this, I didn't know that. There's a lot more flexibility we need to teach people how to do it. Fourthly, we're looking at expanding the ranks. That simply means that right now we every individual point is a rank, and when you add employee credits and whatnot, it gets inflated. And we think that there is a way to, I have the ability to round off ranks and thus allowing for more people to be considered as opposed to having only the top five like persons, but having, allowing more people to be considered in a flexible kind of system. In the midst of all of this, I guess I'm concerned that we make a system that is accessible and flexible without totally throwing out part of the vehicle, and part of that vehicle is the register itself. In essence, I'm saying that, yeah, the vehicle or the register is thrown out because if we can advertise a job at the time the job is there, we put the two together. But at the same time, we have managers who need to hire people, qualified people. And that register, in essence, allows them to draw from that. But at the same time, the complaints that I am hearing over and over is, why are you recruiting for a job right now that isn't open, that for perhaps a position like a fish and game technician or something like that that's going to be open this spring, why are you recruiting for it in the fall? doesn't make sense. In other words, let's put the two things together, allowing people to have the opportunity to compete. Well, in all of this aspect of what we are trying to do right now immediately to make changes, I am committed that we have a system that, one, preserves a merit system. Secondly, that we make changes in the collective bargaining agreements in time, which stops giving privileges to bargaining unit members only and not to the general public. That is to say, we attempt to give equal access to everyone. And thirdly, to encourage local hire while giving equal access to state jobs. And there's a lot of ways that we can do that that we haven't, for whatever reason, done in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. Any questions? Representative Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think what you have there outlined is really good, but not to dampen your spirits or anything like that, but I've been a legislator for 10 years, and this is one of the problems I've had. I used to work out in the bush, and I was always amazed. I worked for the federal government, the number of white people that went out from Anchorage and got their way all out. Mm-hmm. We just loaded the bush with people of experts. And I often wonder, well, why are the loyal people helping themselves in health or in education, or doing the things we're supposed to be doing? Because we had the monopoly on the hiring system is part of the reason. And part of it had to do is that we had no faith in people living elsewhere, I guess, doing for themselves. Because a monopoly system like what happened now with the union protecting itself, who's in there, we want to protect. In the total applicants, if you say we have 200,000, I wonder how many, what percentage are already state employees who are loaded in that system and just waiting for the next opening someplace else. I got my job, I'm a grade 20 and X so-and-so, but I see that maybe I'd like to work in that department or this department. I understand the system is, put your name in three or four places. I'm happy with them having now, but I might see a door opening a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line. And that's what I heard, is really loading the system. So, but we have to go through all those. They're already well employed. They're just looking for upgrading or different departments or benches. Mm-hmm. Have you looked into that angle?
Through the chair, I've been frustrated with that too. I hear what you're saying. It's kind of like people want a little extra job security. At the same time, I feel I have a tremendous responsibility to allow equal access for people and the ability for them to at least compete if they wish to. What happens in many, many cases, what's frustrating to a hiring supervisor is that they have to deal with those that are interested and available, and they start calling and calling and calling and calling and find out, look, I'm, you know, thanks anyway, but I'm not interested, you know, down the line. We have an ability to make them inactive if they don't respond as such. But if they do respond and say, I want to be on the list, they are able to be on that list. If they don't respond to us, then we are able to make them inactive, and therefore they won't show up on the next hiring supervisor's list.
Do you have any idea of how many people are on the roll of 200,000 are currently employed by the state?
Well, I guess it would be a matter of taking the 13-some thousand people and multiple. Oh, I'm sorry.
We have 21,000 people.
Thinking
of,
in terms of the whole
state. How many of those are
government people?
Yeah. How many of those are government people? Of the 21,000 now, maybe half of them got an application.
I'm certain that's the case. In fact, I think we did a study several years ago that suggested that the average employee had something like, I don't know, 4.5 or 10 or whatever it was per employee. We're on other lists besides working in the
position. We're spending a lot of money in one state employee calling that other employee, that employee, and that employee. Do you want to switch that from DNI to education? Imagine the money it's costing us these days just for employees to call each other for potential jobs.
It seems that the question that the previous person that spoke regarding Section 4, saying that we don't have a system to replace this if this bill were enacted, it seems as though the commissioner has already has done considerable work in presenting something that could go into effect in June 30th of 1989. So it seems as though we can take this piece of legislation and pass it on to this next committee.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a few more people who want to testify and who may need to come up with some ideas?
Any other questions
for Mr. Otto? Yes. Representative Herman, do you have a question for Mr. Otto?
Yes.
I don't get some people. First, you talked about if we came up with a new system, we have to what you would see in that new system is to preserve the merit system. Could you give me like some history of the merit system and the background of why in this country do we have such a system, and why does the state of Alaska have to follow that type of system?
Well, I wish I could give you a good history, and all I know is that the state of Alaska system came out of pretty much the old civil service system that was adopted, as I understand it, in territorial days. The merit principle, which is a pretty standard operation within governmental agencies, is that, of course, that the most qualified person without regard for political affiliation, or who you know, or who you're married to, or who you're related to, should be the person considered the highest, or should be hired, or should be at least considered in terms of rank and ability there. So the merit idea there is that I base it on my own experience and training and education versus who I know or what kind of a deal I have from somebody special, like, as opposed to going to work for in my uncle's company or something like that, and being able to move up fast because I'm the uncle's son.
It seems like that's what you need to get into this
system. Yeah. Madam Chair, on that point, it's an important point to bring out because it shows that there's no bad employees. Last time we did this, and Michelle could verify when we were talking about meritorious pay raise, and they always depend on that, and we thought that was really something to encourage exceptional workers and so on. And I think we found out that 96.4% of the state employees get meritorious pay raise. And we said, well, what happened to the 4.3% that didn't? That was your vacancy rate. That's all that was. That was your vacancy rate. And two, 100% of the people got meritorious pay raise because it's so exceptional. Now, is that the same problem that we're going to have with those who are considered for job applicants? You know, if most of the employees who are already working are the ones loading up the system and all meritorious, so it's almost a meaningless concept, except for a employee or an individual who's outside the system trying to get in. So that's where it's really detrimental. There is not fair equality. This person may be extremely good in the private market. And because the employer said, yes, a very excellent worker, she's superb, she's this and everything else, but she's not classified meritorious under the state statutes, even though she may be far superior to that person that others looking for the job. I was wondering if you had evaluated that, like I think Representative Herman is saying, and bring it to its conclusion, it's worthless, except to get points to those people who are already in the system.
Through the chair, if I can respond. Let me make a couple of notes here. One is the fact that, of course, the merit pay increase is a different, story along this line. Part of what I think you're communicating here is the fact that we give employee credits, and therefore they have a higher score, an inflated score, amongst someone who's not an employee, but they may have the exact same training and experience, background-wise, but because this person's been in the state government for a while, they have a higher score. One of the ways that we're looking at dealing with that, I guess I'd say, first of all, we'd like to see that eliminated. We think there's other ways to give promotional possibilities to state employees other than that way. But is to kind of round off scores in a ranking or change the ranking stuff so that more people are able to be considered within a rank. And it's, I don't, without technically kind of showing you the pieces of paper, but it would help to kind of nullify some of the concerns that you've just been expressing. It is something that is a bargaining unit situation here, and that's something that we do have a whole list of things on our goals that we'd like to talk to the union about as we move along in this process. It is a situation that everybody's kind of been tacking on and building on from outside and inside, and when you start cleaning it up and trying to simplify it, you find there's an awful lot of different organizations or processes that you have to go through to make it happen.
That's why we're trying to make it easier on them by law. If you really believe this bill in 25 is what they're doing and they can't get any place, let's put it in legislation.
Only question I guess I have for Mr. Otto.
I want to go on the record. This is a pile of bullshit. Excuse me, Madam Chair, that's the first time I've said anything like that. It's a crying
shame. Please keep it within the bounds of...
Yeah, well, I thought I'd stray out of it because nothing else seems to make the point on this thing. This is a crying shame. I mean, you read the letter from this young lady, Greta Anderson. She's told that the test is held one time at one place. It's held at another place at a different time. The bureaucracy is insensitive. And I don't know, I hope he can do it. If he does, I'm going to write to the Pope and see if I can get him canonized. But it really is. It's just, it is a disgrace.
You're not going to get it.
It is an absolute disgrace. And I...
Representative Boucher, I think you are reflecting the frustration.
Yes, I am.
Many people have expressed not only today,
but
previously.
I seldom do that to this degree. That means I don't think I can do anything about it.
Well, I guess that's my concern with the approach taken in the legislation. It expresses the concern, all right. But it says, we don't know what to do with it, so let's just throw the system out. Mm-hmm. And I guess
the best way. That's what we did in this country when a bunch of people were frustrated over in England. We came and we threw the system over. Sometimes the system is dead. It's dormant.
Well, time to move it up, Madam Chair.
I'm pleased to hear that Mr. Otto has some practical suggestions.
And my apologies for my rude words.
I guess it's springtime.
My apologies. But I meant it.
Springtime. We have that on record.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. There are a few more people who will testify. Nicole Peterson. Nicole Harrison. I'm not sure you want to follow after all of what's gone on. I mean, this is a wild committee today. It's been a wild committee all week.
Are we on, Madam Kim?
No, we're not.
I hope I was.
I realize it's a little dangerous to be this close to Representative Boucher, but I think he'll behave from now on.
I said, it's just a shame. No wonder the Indian sits on his horse with tears coming down. We've got to do something about that, not only in this state, but collectively in this country. We are insensitive.
Thank you, Mr. Roger.
Yes, for the record, my name is Nicole Harrison, and I'm here representing myself today. I testified for this bill once before, and I decided to come back again today to share my comments with those who were not here the last time. I feel that the primary intent of Bill number 326, and looking at the problems with hiring rural applicants, people who live in rural communities, I feel that this problem isn't just in this particular area. As I mentioned before, I live right here in the state's capital, and I am encountering various problems in becoming gainfully employed with the state government. And I feel that a lot of my problems began when I began to question how the application was rated, and it being brought to my attention by personnel representatives that there were problems with rating the applications. Not only were there problems with rating the applications, but there were also problems with the application track system, which each time an applicant submits an application, that application should be put into this particular system, whether the application's qualifications check out against the job specs or not. As I mentioned before, I had problems with that system. I've also had problems with the courtesy registers that are being used. I feel that the main purpose for the courtesy registers to see if the people who you want to hire in a particular job or vacancy within the department is reachable on the register, or how to get around the people who you do not want to consider for the particular vacancy. Some of my problems have stemmed from, in the beginning they did, not being called in for an interview. And after I began to complain, I began to receive the interviews. I just did not receive any job offers. And mentioning again, I've been blocked by this particular current register system over 50 times, and after I got up to the 50th occurrence, I just discontinued the count. My experience as far as education and working experience and the accounting auditing experience, I have a bachelor's degree. I have completed at least 60% of the MBA program here, and I have 7 years of accounting and or auditing experience. And as I said, after I complained, I began to receive the interviews. And after observing or looking over the monthly new hire list to find out if people were being hired in these particular jobs that I was going after, I realized that they were. And 99% of the time, the people who were being hired for as an internal auditor, revenue auditor, bill auditor, et cetera, were classified as non-minorities. And these people also, in this particular report, it mentioned that this was their first appointment, their first job working with the state government. So at one time, I know one particular department gave preference to people who already work for the department, and they use the departmental register quite frequently. In this same department here recently, they had 7 vacancies. And I was interviewed twice for one of those jobs. They were all at the, I think, range 18 level. And I was not hired. And I know that one of the questions, as a matter of fact, the first question that was asked me during the first interview is if I could report on the job within 2 weeks. The job, the 7 positions were located in the Anchorage area. And later on, after reviewing the new hire listing, I realized that the 7 people who were hired for these 7 auditor positions were hired over a period from September of 87 through February of this year. So just knowing this information, I couldn't see why they would want to know if I could report to work within 2 weeks if I was offered the position. I began to question. You know, I began to question the reason. I wanted to know the reason why I was not hired. I had gone over the job specs for the particular job classes before submitting my application, and I felt that not only that I qualified, but I was highly qualified for a lot of these jobs. And when I began to ask why, I have met with a couple of the commissioners, had several telephone conversations, and in the majority of the instances, the cases, they will not tell me why I was not hired. I feel that this is a concern. I feel that every applicant should know why he or she was not hired for a particular job. And I was appalled, you know, of that one department in particular would actually put it in writing that they were denying my request to be told why I was not hired for a particular job. I feel that this current register system is an unfair system. It isn't just unfair to the people who live in the rural communities, but I feel that it's unfair for people who live in places like the capital city. They're not being given a fair chance to compete. I feel that the only reason why they began to call me in for interviews is because I began to complain. Why is it that I'm not being considered? And no one would answer that question. And now we're at a point where they can say, well, yes, we considered a minority candidate, but we feel that we had to hire this other person. Getting back to the 7 auditing positions that were hired, 3-level, 7 revenue auditing positions hired at 3, it was 3-level, range 18, I think, range 18. Later I found out, now my raw score, which is my numerical score at the 1-level, is 95. Now this is before interview takes place, and I noted that sometime between July of 1987 and I would say December of 1987, this particular department hired 2 people at the 1-level, at the 1 auditor level. I was never notified that they would be considering applicants. And here I am again. I'm still seeking employment, and one case, my rating has expired. The rating has not been opened up to the public for over 2 years now. And I was told that they do not anticipate opening up this particular register anytime in the near future. So I'm blocked. That rating has expired. It expired at the beginning of this year. So I'm blocked from even being my name showing up on the register. You know, with all of the complaints that I have submitted, you know, and voicing my opinion as to how I felt about this particular register system, I feel that I'm presently being blackballed. I feel that the word has probably gotten around that I have questioned the validity of this particular current registry system, and that they have no intentions of hiring me. I've gone through several departments. I cannot say that it's one, two, or three. There are a list of departments, and as I said, they are hiring. You know, they cannot say that they are not hiring. They are hiring. I am in support of this particular bill with a few adjustments. And as I said, I feel that people who live in larger cities, such as the capital city in Anchorage, should also be included under the umbrella of this particular bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Davidson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Ma'am, in the scenario that you, or the two individuals who were hired, how did it work now? Was it, were they ahead of you on the register, or what were you in? I didn't quite understand the...
Okay, and one position I applied for, and I was interviewed for twice. It was an auditor position. There were seven of those positions, not one, but there were seven positions. During a particular time last fall, I requested from the Commissioner of Administration my particular ranking on that particular day, and under the various mm-hmm. auditing levels.
When
one,
you say
two,
ranking?
Four, right, where I showed up on the register, like if you call the register today, where would I rank out? And on that particular day, I ranked out either fourth or fifth on the particular register for the auditors. There were seven positions hired. There were seven positions hired in the Anchorage area, and there was another auditor position at the same level. They hired an applicant in this, to work in the Seattle office also. So, and I'm sure that that can change, but another thing that puzzled me during the time that the department was filling these seven auditor positions, they requested over 11 registers to fill those. So all of the seven positions are in the same location, okay, but they requested over seven.
I guess what I'm trying to establish here is were there people more qualified who got the work and they should not have gotten the work because you were higher on them than them on the register, and that therefore you're saying that you should have been hired and not them?
Okay, I haven't been able to find out that information as to, you know, on the 11 registers, like the 11 registers that were used, and of course some were not used because there were only seven positions. I have not been able to find out what my ranking was at that particular time, but my ranking last August, on a particular day last August, was either fourth or fifth. And as I said, I'm sure that it has changed. It can change. I'm under the impression that, you know, your ranking can change daily. But all of the applicants who were, the seven applicants who were hired, five were hired from the outside, and two were promotions from within. And all seven of these applicants were non-minority applicants. And two other positions at the one level were also established for non-minority applicants.
Thank you. I think you've answered my question. If I may just ask, what indication have you had that the word is out on you?
I am just assuming that, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I have 7 years of accounting and auditing experience. I have a bachelor's degree. I have the accounting credits to qualify me. I have been certified by an official federal agency. I received a certification as a professional auditor and a professional accountant. I feel that as the number of interviews that I've had, something is wrong. And when it gets to the point where they refuse to tell me why it is that they're not selecting me for the job, if they truly believe that the applicants they're selecting for these jobs are higher qualified, and then I feel that they should not have a problem with telling me this. But I'm assuming that there is a problem with it. And even if the applicants were rated out from looking at their raw score on the register and then being interviewed and taking everything, all variables into consideration, in the job class 1410, which includes the auditing job class, there is a problem. I don't think that they have one. Maybe there is one black female, you know, who has been hired as an accountant. There are no black females in the auditing, in any of the auditing positions. So I have no idea as to traditionally the jobs have been set up for white males or what. I have no idea, but I do know that presently, and I began to check the stats, I would say mid last year, and I do know that they have not hired any black females in this particular job class.
Thank you.
Representative
Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Shame that the new director didn't stay here and listen to some testimony. I know he's had a lot of time when, maybe, Madam Chairman, next year when you're in charge of the State Affairs, you can demand that the administration put them layers after they listen to the people. Yeah, that'd be, and not speak for
I don't know why they left.
Yeah,
they had other things to do.
I was wondering, in these seven people that gave you that got hired, how many perhaps were already employed by the state?
Two
already, and five new.
The other five, this was their first appointment.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, may I ask, where did the director come from?
Fairbanks.
How long has he lived there?
How much experience has he had in that area?
He was already in the system. He was assistant personnel officer in Fairbanks.
Where before
thank
that?
You. Nicole, may I just ask you one last question?
I figured.
I don't know a lot about the register system, and I'm trying to understand what about it isn't working. And I think you gave us one or two rather specific suggestions that I just sort of like to clarify in my mind. One, if I understood you correctly, was that when you are not hired, that you get an explanation, notice of not being hired, and why you weren't hired. Is that what I understood?
Yes.
It seems like a reasonable requirement.
Well, I thought so.
And then, secondly, something about you're being blocked when your rating expired. And is there a specific suggestion that you would have about how the system would change that aspect of the problem?
Number one, I feel that when you say the seven positions, one of the seven positions, they went out and they advertised three times in the newspaper. The register has been opened for the third time within a 1 year period. And I feel that, you know, what someone else has suggested, that when they get ready to fill a position, go out and actively recruit at the time they know that they have vacancies. Have the applications, once the applicants submit their applications, have the applicants rated, and the applicants they feel rate out the highest, considered, you know, have been called in for an interview. I feel that, yes, there is a problem with, for example, the application track system. I found out in one auditor position or job class I qualified for, it took me over 9 months to receive my rating. And I had to continue to call the department, but within that time, a number of non-minority candidates received their ratings for that particular job class. And on the first morning that the job class was open, I hand-carried my application to the department, 9 a.m. But this is the same application that I did not receive a rating for over 9 months. And as I said later, I found out that numerous ratings had been given to non-minority candidates. So the application track system doesn't always work. My application was never recorded or submitted to that system when I first submitted it that morning at 9 o'clock. I found this out several months later.
Thank you very much for coming back again. I know it's hard sometimes to share a personal experience, but I appreciate you doing so.
Many of them.
Mr. Peters,
are you working now?
No, I am not. I have been pursuing employment for close to 3 years with the state government.
You what?
I have been pursuing employment with the state government.
Have you had an opportunity to do any part-time work?
Temporary seasonal position about a year ago, and I think it was at the range 6 level.
So thank you very much. Mr. Peters? And is there anyone after Mr. Peters that wishes to testify on this bill who has not? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, was here, I believe it was the first hearing of this bill, a month or so ago. At that time, of course, there was a teleconference going at the same time, and testimony had to be cut short. So I'm back again to share with the committee some of my thoughts about what I think should happen with regard to this bill and what should happen to the register system. I appreciate the opportunity of being able to come back here again. I definitely support House Bill 326, and I would I would also indicate that I believe that the last person that was up here testified to with regard to who it affects, that certainly it affects the Native community in the bush, and probably the most impacted group of all the people we can talk about, but it also impacts people in the cities. And we've heard some prior testimony about what the current administration is planning to do in terms of rectifying some of the problems. I think that's a lot of it. I also think it's kind of having your head in the sand when the director of personnel and the commissioner of administration come with the aura that they have control and that they can change this thing and make it work, when actually they do not have control. If you were to survey the 13 executive departments, include the University of Alaska and the Alaska Railroad, you would find everybody's doing their own thing. And essentially, what the Department of Administration and Division of Personnel does is they set down the parameters, but then the parameters are so wide until people can do whatever they wish. And that's essentially what's being done and what has been done with my all the experience that I've had with state government. Some of the things that I believe that need to be done is, first of all, the procedures need to be overhauled so that they're standardized procedures, so that each agency, when I say agency, I'm talking about a department inclusive, is required to abide by an established set of procedures that cannot be deviated from. And I recognize that if the personnel people were sitting here, they would probably be pulling their hair out at this point by my making a suggestion. But I think that's the only way in which there's going to be fairness in the system. And a good bit of the problem is not necessarily the registers per se, but how the registers are manipulated and how people are manipulated. And to speak to Representative Herman's question about how do we even get into the merit system to begin with, and Mr. Otto, who is the director of personnel, certainly ought to know, and he obviously did not, but I can tell you how we got into the register system. Prior to 1919, in the federal government, people obtained their jobs in the federal government by political patronage. Whomever you supported in a campaign, those were the people who got the jobs. In 1923, that was all changed to Brown. It was determined that this was not the way to run the country, and it certainly wasn't the way to build a bureaucracy. And that was the beginning of the merit system. To get it out of the political patronage arena and put it into a system where everybody had an equal opportunity and equal access to government jobs, as opposed to the way the system worked previously. What happened after that was many states began to pattern their civil service after what had been done in the federal government. And the federal government has revamped that system numerous times. The last time, I believe, was about 1949 or 1950, to improve on it. And I say if the federal government, with in excess of 3 million employees, can do this, and with the numbers of people who apply for federal jobs nationwide, in addition to all the territories, there's no reason why the state of Alaska, with 13,000 employees, cannot do the same thing. It is not that difficult a job. And what it requires is that somebody who has had more exposure than having worked in the state of Alaska system, which is what we have. The people who administer the personnel system in this state government are people who came in on lower levels, learned their profession, if you want to call it that, by rote, and eventually get into positions of command. And all they're able to do, they're not able to do any thinking in terms of how do we improve or how should we handle these things, but they go on their past experience, which is the only experience they have. Now, I was hopeful in this next administration, the one we currently have, that that would be done. But Representative Boucher asked, where did Mr. Otto come from? Mr. Otto has been in the state of Alaska about 4 years total.
That's right.
Okay? He came from out of state. He had no personnel background or experience whatsoever. He took a very low-level position here in Juneau. He stayed here for less than a year's time, moved on up to Fairbanks as an assistant personnel director in Fairbanks. This was during the Frank Ray administration, okay? And now that Frank Ray is gone, and now that Deanna DeSimone is gone, who did have some knowledge, limited though it may have been, we have now Mr. Otto who's taking the reins and who's coming before you saying, we're going to do all these good things to improve on this system. Mr. Otto does not have the wherewithal to do that. And I don't mean this maliciously. I am telling you factual information.
Madam Chair, what factual information are you telling me here? Because this, it seems this is a pretty serious charge. And I'm trying to understand exactly what the factual information is you're going to use to support that charge.
The factual information is that Mr. Otto did not have any personnel experience before he came here. He does have an education. Before he came to Alaska.
You're saying he still has not.
I'm saying he is now the director of personnel for the entire state system.
That's right. And I'm saying, what factual information are you going to give me to support your charge?
All he said is a guy.
I haven't made a charge. I'm giving you information.
Limited experience is what he's saying.
I'm telling you, the man that does not have the experience that it takes to do what they're proposing to do and what this bill proposes to do.
Oh, I see.
Okay? That's all I'm saying. I'm not making a charge against him. I have no charges to make. All I'm saying is he has not had exposure. He has not had the kind of exposure that it would take to sit down and deal with a system that is so screwed up as this one. He doesn't have it. Even I don't. And I spent 30 years in personnel work with the federal government and 5 years with the Office of Equal Employment Opportunity dealing with personnel matters. And even I don't feel that I'm qualified to sit here and tell you that if I were appointed director of personnel, that I could come in here and turn the system around. I would need some additional experts from outside who have had greater exposure than I have had to come in to assist me.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you saying that we need to hire someone to run the state bureaucracy from outside the state of Alaska?
If you can't find somebody within the state to do it, and if we're serious about improving the system, we do it in all other professions. When the Department of Law cannot find an attorney here to come in and be an assistant attorney general for a specific kind of law, they go outside and get them.
They just like to go outside and get them anyway.
Well, I have had some experience with the Department of Law, too, and I know that they do this. And I'm not here to say whether Mr. Otto should be continued in the job. All I'm saying is that what is needed in order to change the system, make it a viable system, and one that is fair to everybody across the board, whether they live in the bush or whether they live in the cities, is to have somebody who has the kind of personnel background and experience and exposure to more than one system, so they can come in here and pull from the best of all systems that they know about and develop a system here that is a good one, that is viable, that is fair to everybody. That's all I'm saying.
Certainly do. Are you aware of any studies or any lists or any efforts by the bureaucracy to attempt this overhaul or to standardize the procedures as you have suggested? Are you aware of any effort by our state government to, in fact, make some kinds of adjustments as you suggest?
Only what Mr. Otto said here today. Mm-hmm. There was a study done with regard to the classification process. That's the classification of jobs. What jobs, how jobs should be classified, what kind of ratings they should have, what kind of salaries they should pay. I'm not sure that study really got anywhere. I don't think mm-hmm. it's been implemented. But during the last administration, that study was an ongoing study for approximately almost 4 years, mm-hmm. just about 4 years.
If I may just ask one more question. Sure. Could you give me an example? And I've never applied for a state job other than the one that I was elected to. And it sounds like it might be a good idea.
Not to do it,
exactly. Could you give me an example of how the registers are manipulated?
Yes, I'll give you two examples. So one would be the courtesy register, and you heard some mention of that earlier. And I thought when I was the director of Equal Employment Opportunity that we had put a stop to the courtesy register system. And what that amounts to is that, for instance, if you had a job that was available, or let's say you didn't have a job that was available, but you anticipate having a job that's available. You could go into the Office of Personnel and ask for a register for that particular job. And nobody questions whether you have the job, whether you have a vacancy for that job at all. You get your register. And you look down there, and let's say that you have in mind that I'm your friend, and you would like to hire me. Okay. So you look on the register.
Now, who,
register
what is my position?
I'm you're just a supervisor.
Supervisor, okay.
And I'm on the outside. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I'm one of these employees that's on 10 different registers. Wouldn't make any difference. The fact of the matter is that you anticipate a vacancy, and I'm your friend, and you would like to see me fill that vacancy.
As a supervisor, say, in the division of
It wouldn't make any difference. In EEO, that didn't happen. Not while I was there.
Oh,
but it could happen if I had been the kind of individual who would take advantage of that system. You see?
Okay, let's go on
with the analogy with the
we
example.